Hi guys, welcome back to Love in Dubai Show, where we go through the top trending stories that everyone across the country is talking about. We go live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. We love to see your comments coming through before, during, and after the show. Our top story for you today, storm recovery mode. UAE grants 6-month loan deferrals amid storm crisis.
As well, flexible learning choices for schools across the UAE.
RTA introduces easy vehicle plate replacement service.
As well, a man walked from Dubai to Riyadh, hoping to meet Ronaldo.
Which begs the question, what would you do to meet your hero? Also, we're going to sit down with Dima Al-Alami, who is empowering literacy and family bonds with her new book, 48 Stories of Exile from Palestine.
It is day 199 days since the war began. Sorry, the genocide began in Gaza on October 7. Now, the current death toll stands at 34,151. The number of injured people is 77,084. And 1.9 million people have been displaced from their homes.
Jumping into traffic, if you have updates, please let us know. It's looking like a lot of red grids across the city. So if you need to get there, if you're sitting at home now and you've got somewhere to be at about 9:30, I would recommend leaving immediately because traffic is jam-packed. Yes, we also have an update from the RTA 14 hours ago, and they basically said they appreciate your cooperation and understanding during these challenging times. We encourage you to reduce using the metro during peak hours, which of course is difficult for many. But they're basically saying plan your trips ahead, use alternative stations and public transport until all stations return to normal.
That is true. I tried to use the metro a few days ago, and it was still, you know, it was not very fully opened. But of course, you know, it was a lot of traffic, and maybe because people are trying to avoid getting on the road, and it was kind of like hectic. So maybe using the metro and public transportation is the option right now.
Well, they're saying avoid using it in peak hours.
That's
But however, if you have specific questions, they're great on the community management front. So jump in and say, hey, you know, for example, what's the status from DMCC towards Union Metro Station? And the response is all the green line is working in both operations. Still some struggles on the red line, but as they said, avoid in peak hours because of the, what would you call it? The jam of people trying to get on, and if there's missing statements, if there's missing stations, it's just causing what's the word we're looking for? Like
a lap?
An overlap of a lot of people, a clogging of sorts.
Okay, yeah.
It's causing a clogging of sorts.
Yeah,
look,
it
it's not an easy time to get to work. We're just seeing the situation on the roads right now. A lot of kind of still some areas closed, but the city is trying to get us moving. And I think that what the RTA has said is just we appreciate your cooperation during a challenging time.
I mean, the UAE has cooperated with us by having, let's say, the floods cleared in literally a little to, it's in very little time, let me say, you know, so maybe we should cooperate with them as well. And just like listen to what they say on their socials.
And if you want to get the updates, do check via the RTA. Speaking of cooperation and recovery mode, we have some good news, less good news for insurers, but more good news for you. Well, a silver lining during a challenging time, should we say. Storm recovery mode is on, and the UAE Central Bank has granted 6-month loan repayment deferrals. This came via the Central Bank UAE last night. What they did is they issued a notice to all banks and insurance companies, which allows the deferral of repayments of installments of personal and car loans for customers affected by the floods, and this will last for a period of 6 months. These deferrals will not have any additional fees. There'll be no interest or profits for the companies or otherwise, and the principal amount of the loan will not be increased during that time.
As well, on the other side, the central bank confirmed that the damages to vehicles and homes resulting from the heavy rains during the weather condition the country witnessed last week are covered by insurance. If there is an insurance policy, if you hold a comprehensive insurance policy, the central bank further added that the same applies to homes as well.
This is huge. I don't know about you, but driving along the roads in the last couple of days and seeing the devastating effects of the cars on the roads, and just, you know, they were stood still, and you're just thinking that poor driver has lost their car. You heard, you know, firsthand accounts of people saying, I had to leave I had to leave my car and how traumatic that must have been, the emotional side, but also on the bigger front, the financial side. So this is big news via the Central Bank UAE last night. They said they announced to banks and insurance companies. It's going to take a little while to roll out, but if you have any concerns, they've connected you to the Ombuds Unit Sanidac. So any queries related on this question in particular can go to Sanidac. If your insurance company isn't playing ball, that is.
I mean, honestly, at this point, it is just like amazing how the UAE is not only handling the damage that it has done to the country, but as well to the damage that it has done to the residents and citizens as well. You know, we have talked about this yesterday and before. However, the fact that they are actually helping all of the victims of the floods, whether it's your car that got affected or whether it's your home, you know, like if you have insurance, then I would say you are safe this point, and as well, you know, like the country is there for you and recognizes the fact that, you know, like this is a flaw, this is a work by nature that, you know, no one had a hold of. So, and a lot of people did get affected, and therefore they are actually stepping a foot in and they will be helping all of you, which is just like, I would say it's just like, you know, good, because like yesterday we got a lot of questions like, fine, it's all for citizens. When I was with Lubna on the Smashy show, what about residents? And I was like, even residents are getting, you know, the help, just like, because let's say a company is helping only, let's say, citizens, does not mean that it's not helping residents. The UAE as a whole is actually indeed helping residents in so many ways that we do not need to recognize on spot or immediately, but they are, I mean, with, you know, the news that, you know what, it's inclusive for all, because like it recognizes, and that's what makes UAE UAE and Dubai Dubai.
Exactly. Big news on the insurance front. It's going to mean so much to so many people to wake up to that this morning, whether or not, as long as you have that comprehensive insurance policy. And finally, they urge the public to carefully read and comprehend your insurance policy to protect your insurance rights. And also, as I said, approach Sanidac, the financial and insurance ombudsman, if you have a complaint or dispute with your insurance company. Let's move on to our next story. What's going on at the schools?
Well, for schools are actually given there are different choices for schools, you know. So schools in the UAE can now choose between teaching students online, in person, or a mix of both for the rest of the week. Now, we have seen lately how the Sharjah Private Education Authority made this decision due to the recent bad weather. It's not only for that as well. It has been posted on X that it has begun with Dubai. The decision has begun in Dubai. And then it said in a statement that as well followed that, you know, Dubai has just had the decision to either choose online learning or in person.
True. I think that just makes it kind of also highlights that people are still struggling. There's homes that are still affected. I spoke to one parent yesterday who said out of a class of 20 kids, 13 were present. And if 7 kids are not present, you imagine it's related to the flood and what they're going through. So that's why also the KHDA has announced the option for flexibility and distance learning. And I think in Sharjah, it's Tuesday until Thursday. But you can just get in touch with the Sharjah authorities on that one. We're going to move into a post about what happens, and this is a real concern for people, what happens if you lost your vehicle plate during the floods?
Now, see, this is the thing. Because everyone like was like, oh my God, my vehicle got ruined in the floods. The RTA is not helping. We've got a lot of DMs about that. However, the RTA introduces easy vehicle plate replacement service. Now, Dubai's Roads and Authority, Dubai Roads and Transport Authority, RTA, has devised a convenient solution for drivers who have lost their car registration plates due to the recent extreme weather conditions and need replacements, as numerous vehicles got trapped in the floods, leading to various challenges for drivers, including costly repairs, electrical issues and the loss of number plates.
So, if this has happened to you, how do you fix it? To request a replacement for a lost vehicle plate, customers only need to submit an application via the RTA website, and then you need to visit one of the designated centres listed to collect the new plate. Additionally, Dubai Police is providing a streamlined service in this case to make sure it's easy for you. I've been through the process before. I lost my plate. I hate life admin. It's not easy. However, knowing that they've simplified it, when a lot of people have the same question, unfortunately, it's a challenging time, but they're trying to get the information to you as quickly as possible. That lightens the load a little bit, because when it happened to be, you know, you're checking five different websites to get That's the most true. Official source, and then you don't know if, you know, this website is correct, this website is correct, what do I do? You hear different, you ask people questions, but it's on RTA right there. If it's happened to you, this is the two-step process to fix your problem.
100%. And again, see, this is the thing, like, I keep on getting a lot of messages like, hey, this happened, what should I do? I mean, it's all posted on the official socials of the RTA, you know what I mean? And as well as you've mentioned, as I've mentioned before, that the RTA and officials are there, actually, and they have had a lot of the residents in the UAE following the floods and what has happened and what it resulted in, the damage that it has resulted. So we keep on forgetting that the UAE is actually there for its residents, helping them, whether it's your house or your car.
I don't think we're forgetting. And I think we're, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, there is like this stigma or stereotype, like, you know what, the UAE only helps citizens. But it's a wrong misconception.
Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't. And I don't know if that. Yeah,
it is, because like I have literally had DMs saying, OK, fine, what is there for residents? They are helping citizens. What is there for residents? And to everyone who actually DM'd me that, then why are we not recognizing these tweets? You know what I mean? It's like they keep on forgetting, you know, they think Twitter is just like, or X, actually, previously Twitter, is just like a platform, and they just like post these things for the sake of posting, and they do not follow the official accounts.
Yeah.
It's like they go, they have like, they ask questions, and I've replied to them saying like, we are a medium. I would advise that you would check the RTA.
Yeah,
because it's I would say it's a very confusing situation.
It's so true. I think there's a lot of topics to cover there, but I think sometimes there can be a lot of rumors flying around on WhatsApp and questions and things. But generally, and what Love of Dubai do is we'll always take the news from the official source and try and bring that to you. You know, there's, for example, Sanadec, the ombudsman unit. I wasn't aware of that until today, but there's many official channels that you can reach out to authorities and get that information. And, you know, communicating with an entire public isn't always easy. But rather than allowing rumor mills to flourish, we'd always recommend you jump straight to the official source. And there's a lot of help there for people who need it. And I think this morning's announcement regarding insurance to homes and cars that are covered for that have comprehensive insurance affected by the flood damage, I think is an amazing step. I think insurance companies will think otherwise, but for people who've been affected, this is big news. So it's all via the Central Bank UAE, who made the big statement last night. So it's great. So if you want to get the full read on that, Central Bank UAE, check it with your insurance company. If they have an issue with your question, then get onto Sanadec, the ombudsman. We'll move on at 9:47 to our next story. So moving away from floods, you know, it was a week ago, and it surely has been dominating headlines here and internationally. But how about the story of a man who walked from Dubai to Riyadh hoping to meet his idol, Ronaldo? I love this so much. He is a massive Cristiano Ronaldo superfan. Kevin KP just rocked up in Riyadh after trekking all the way from Dubai. That's right. He walked a whopping 1,200 kilometers across the beautiful desert in the hopes of meeting his idol. It took him 36 days of pure sweat and determination to pull it off. And we think that is pure dedication.
Now, servants, aka at the underscore their underscore footer underscore official, is a cross-country walker who has previously walked Kerala to Kashmir, a total of 3,200 kilometers back in 2021. But his mission begs the question, how far would you go to meet your superheroes? How far would you go, Casey?
Well, the question, who is my superhero that I would do that for. I love the, how long did it take him? 36 days? Like if you have 36 days of pure solitude, because he did this alone. Mm-hmm. I think I would walk. No. For a family member, I would do that.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have like pure celebrities that I idolize to that point. But I get it.
Yeah.
And I get that some people look at Cristiano Ronaldo like, you know, he's not just a footballer. He is a machine. He is dedicated. He's passionate. He's put everything to it. And there's many reasons to be a fan for him. I'd do this for a family.
I mean,
if there was a reason.
No, but the thing is, honestly, I feel like to every person, they have their own. I would do this to that person, but I wouldn't do this to that person.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? But for me, I don't know, like for me, I would not do it. For no one, I would not do it because I am. I love walking. I love working out and so on. But walking for 36 days, I mean, I will need rest. I will need to go back. I will need AC. I will need all of the things that, you know, like we do get.
So we should note that Kevin is a cross country walker. Did I add it? So he's walked, as you said, from Kashmir to Kerala. So this is something that, you know, he loves to do and he's passionate. So why not put your two passions together?
Meet your idol.
Super fun.
And meet your idol.
And you can actually see this video, which I love. He's outside. Oh, I'm going to say the wrong football club, and I'll be fired from my job. Oh, it's Al Hilal. I was going to say Al Nasser.
Yeah.
It's Al Hilal.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's outside the correct football club that Ronaldo plays for in Saudi. And he got to see him. That's amazing.
I mean, you know, for sure it was, I mean, it would have been devastating if he hadn't seen Ronaldo. I mean, if I was him and I walked like that much distance to see Ronaldo and took me that much time and I hadn't seen Ronaldo, I would throw a temper tantrum. I would throw a temper tantrum. But lucky him.
You're alone. No one's going to hear you.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's okay.
He looks like such a nice guy. I think fair play to him. I think he loves walking and he walked the whole way to Saudi. What a mission, what a feat. And like, I think, you know, walking is one of these things that it's good for the mind, it's good for the soul, it's good for the body. The more we do of it, the better.
100%.
So why not?
I agree with you. Maybe just walk. I'll walk under my house.
I'm just imagining you outside like a football club in Saudi throwing a huge temper tantrum. You're like, where's Ronaldo?
I'm like, where is he?
Why is Ronaldo not here? Does he not know I'm coming? Although we should point out that Ronaldo has been spending some time in Abu Dhabi. He's opened a restaurant there. Himself and Georgina had a beautiful weekend not too long ago. So there is the possibility that if you don't want to walk the whole way to Saudi, you might be able to walk to Abu Dhabi and catch him.
I mean, he's not like...
He's not for you.
He's not for me. You know, I'm not a very football girl, to be honest with you.
Me either.
Yeah, well, maybe I would... No, actually, I wouldn't walk for anyone, so... Sorry, I take that back.
Speaking of inspiring, it's 9:51, which means it's time for our next guest. She's back on the show, Dima Al-Alami, sharing her new book, 48 Stories of Exile from Palestine. She'll be with us after this very short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Love in Dubai show. Meet Dima Al-Alami, the brains behind 48 Stories of Exile from Palestine. With 15 years of experience in education and an MA in education, she's VP and a mom and author of This Is My Body, Don't Touch Me as well. She started her Instagram to bridge the gap in parent-child reading, sharing tips and book recommendations to spark love of reading. But today she returns to talk about her new book, 48 Stories of Exile for Palestine. It's absolutely beautiful from the cover, but we're going to dive into what's inside. Welcome to the show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for having me again. It's such a pleasure to be here and to speak about this book on Love in Dubai. You know, I always say this is the page that spreads kindness and compassion, and you're the first to repost these videos. So this book is exactly about that. So thank you so much for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for being here. So my first question to you is, what inspired you to write this book?
So basically, my mom is Iraqi, my dad's Palestinian, and I grew up in Jordan. I always say I'm Arab, but more importantly, I'm human. I got really affected by what's happening around the world. And I remember when there was the earthquake 2 years ago, I believe, in Syria, Turkey, and I was just like trying to help. And people started thinking I'm Turkish or Syrian. I'm like, no, I'm human, but I was devastated with what I saw. Mm. So for this book, obviously with the genocide that's taking place and everything that's happening in Gaza, I was feeling very deflated and I was like feeling lost, demotivated, helpless in so many ways. And then I saw a video of Hajja Hadia. I think you shared her picture. And she was this really, really old lady dressed beautifully in a Palestinian thobe, you know, and she was in a hospital injured. And one of those young reporters went up to her and she started kind of like teasing him and flirting with him in a very innocent, cute way. And I'm like, is that like, is she injured in a hospital being exiled again because she had moved from Tul Kerem? And I'm like, but she's full of love. You know, she's full of love. She's full of passion. She's smiling. She's happy. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, how can she do that? And I'm sitting here with all the privileges feeling like I cannot do anything. I'm so negative. I'm so sad. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to use what from her, inspired by her, I'm going to use my love for storytelling to do something about what's happening. And this is where it all started. And then it also hit me because she only took two things when she was forced out of her home. She took a paper that showed her identification card, and it showed that she was born in 1944 in Tul Kerem, you know, which is a city in Palestine. And the other thing is a picture of her home, current home in Gaza. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh my God, people who were born before a Nakba in 1948, you know, they're quite old and, you know, like they will pass, unfortunately, very soon. And if no one tells their stories are going to die with them. So I had both a sense of, oh my God, I'm full of love now and I want to use like everything in my heart, love for my land, love for my people in a book. And at the same time, I want to preserve that. So this is how the book 48 Stories of Exile started.
Wow, what a beautiful initiative by you. And also how amazing for the people to know that their stories have been honored and will be reshared through time in the correct way. So first of all, what you've done is amazing. Tell us about, so 48 stories, I'm sure it features 48 stories, but tell us about the process. So you were inspired, and then what happened next?
So I was inspired, and I actually decided to dedicate the book to Hajja Hadia. So you opened the dedication page, and it's her.
Beautiful.
Unfortunately, she was martyred and in front of her home, but this book is for her, yeah. She was drinking tea, and she was assassinated, but this book is for her, and inshallah, every house in the world will have a picture, a part of Hajja Hadia with him, or within their home. So basically what happened is, all I knew, I wanted to preserve these stories, so I know. It was such an emotional process. I ended up actually hospitalized because of this book, because even the stories, and I always say, yes, I may have led this, you know, but I am so grateful. We had over 80 people work on this book, and over 16 to 17 nationalities. We had Americans, British, Irish, Russian, Indian, Pakistani. So many people wanted to come together. And till now, everyone's like, how can I help part two? I'm like, just give me time. I don't want to get divorced and I want my kids to love me. So this is a community project, and it's just about, you know, being compassionate to one another and understanding, mm-hmm. you know, every single one of us wants to live in dignity and peace and love, you know, and how I started was like, okay, share your exile stories. And then on Instagram, mm-hmm. and then I was flooded with stories, you know, and I'm like, okay, what do I do with those stories? You know, so this is where I asked my community, and I reached out to Nahla, the co-producer, Nahla Al-Malki. And I'm like, okay, I need your help. You know, she's so good with like getting things organized. And we started organizing the stories and selecting the ones that we want to include in the book. And then we're like, okay, how do we organize them? You know, we had many, many stories, and we're like, okay, let's organize them in cities. So in the book, you'll find 13 cities of exile, many of which, they're not only from 1948 and Nakba, there's in 67, there's in between, there's even now. So we have Gaza, Al-Quds, Nablus, Majdal. And then I'm like, okay, I'm a children's book author, and I usually write in Arabic. You know, I love writing in Arabic, and this is my mother tongue. But I'm like, the message here is to get the English-speaking world to understand our history, our story from our side, and people just like you and me. And I always say, although I'm a reader, but maybe I don't enjoy reading Edward Said, who I love, you know, like who has a 600-page book, you know. Every story in this book is 200 to 800 pages, words long. So it's very simple. You can open it, read it, but really get the essence of what Palestinians went through since 1948. And I'm so grateful also for every single illustrator who worked pro bono. So we have unique illustrations for every city in the book. And they all worked pro bono, the editors, the illustrators, everyone in this book.
Nice.
So I want to get back to when I first asked you the first question. You said that you are human.
Yes.
You do not, because your mother is Iraqi and your dad is Palestinian, and your mother yourself.
Yes.
So, do you raise your kids to be as well like only human, or do they say like, oh yeah, I am from this country, so I only relate to this country? So how is it as well? Not only how do you raise your kids like in that sense, like as a human.
Yeah.
How do you manage, you know, with like the, of course your schedule must be filled,
yes.
You know, and I just can't imagine because like, you know, people go like, oh my God, it's a lot of work. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. So how do you manage?
To be honest, the first part of your question is my children are confused, you know, because their dad is of a different ethnicity as well. You know, he's Jordanian, British, and like, it's just confusing. On National Day, I get a flag and I get my son a t-shirt with like a British flag, American flag, Jordanian, Palestinian, and a bit of Iraqi. And I'm like, how many more flags can we put, you know? So honestly, I'm just like, just be kind, you know? And like, I don't care where you're from, as long as you're kind, as long as you're compassionate, as long as you have empathy towards others, that's what I care about. For me, that's the most important thing. That's number one. Number two, I mean, listen, with everything that's going on, you know, if people for me in Gaza are figuring out how to parent in these very difficult circumstances, if they're becoming so, you know, like innovative in how they survive, you know, I found it as no excuse. You know, I think, you know, I for 4 months, this is like 30,000 words. And again, coordinating with over 60 people and publishing a book within this very, very limited time frame with all the legal. We end up publishing in Jordan. Like, it's such a complicated process. But to do that, you know, every time I felt like deflated, it's not that I didn't complain. I did, you know, especially to Nahla and Fatima, our lead editor. But I'm like, listen, they're surviving a genocide for that long. You know, if they can do it, I have to do it. So there was no question about me figuring it out and getting it done.
Speaking of, actually, it's great to have you on the show because obviously you work in education.
Yes.
And although this isn't a children's book, we do ask, I'm sure there's parents who, you know, struggle with how to tell the story of Palestine and what's going on right Correct. Now to their kids. Do you have any tips on that?
So for me, honestly, because of everything that's happening, a lot of people created resources, you know, resources to support, you know, about Palestine, books. And I think at the end of the day, if you simplify it, just like any other question that you ask, for me, I always make it a metaphor between, you know, a bully and bullied and bystanders, you know. So forget the labels. But, you know, what would you do in a case where you see someone bullying someone else? How can you stand up for that person? Do you always stand up in the same way? Are there different ways to stand up for that person? And for me, what I love about this book, although I always say it's 11 plus, just because they're exile stories, so they might be emotionally heavy. But, you know, if you look at the illustrations, there are a lot of conversation starters in this book. And we included in every story actual pictures, real pictures of the main characters. So even if you're sitting with your child, you don't necessarily need to read every single word in the actual personal narratives. But you can look at the picture of Yaffa and speak about the oranges. You can look at Akka and speak about the domes that you can see there. And these are the conversation starters, because I always say, regardless of what the humanitarian cause is, if you're in love with that country, if you're in love with that cause, you'll find a way to fight for it. You'll find a way to speak up for it. And that's what matters when it comes to our children.
So, you know, we live in the era of digital.
Yes.
You know, everything is digital. Kids probably like they have iPads, they have phones, and they read off the phone, they read off the iPad. And it's kind of like hard to limit what information gets to them. And as a kid, their minds are there like sponges. So whatever they read or whatever they watch is kind of like absorbed into them. So how do you manage to control that? Like, what books do you choose to your kids? For them to read.
So for me, again, it depends. I have a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, actually, and a 3-year-old. So the 7-year-old has a mind of his own now. So the control is a bit kind of limited. But again, I always link reading. Reading is a lifestyle. And for me, it affects every part of your life. So if he's going through something, I try to prompt him into reading certain books, you know. And I think reading before bed, and it's not only before bedtime, but sitting with your son or your daughter and reading certain things and relating, you know, we often often try to prompt our kids with questions and telling them, oh, did you experience this or that? But when I read the story with Hazza or Mirad, my kids, I always say, oh my God, you know, this character, it reminds me when I had work and I felt anxious and I was nervous before this interview, you know, and I had butterflies. So every time I read with them, I try to relate to what's happening in the story or the book that we're reading so that they know that this is a chance for you to tell me whatever it is that's on your mind. And I think that's more powerful than just reading. It's actually the conversation you have through the books.
Speaking of conversation through the books, and briefly to go back to this one, is there any stories? So say if I pick it up, I've got 3 minutes to read it.
Yes.
Oh, what page would you direct me to? Or
oh,
is there any
God.
Story that really kind of touched you?
Honestly, like, this is such a tough question, because although I've read every single story narrative, I would say more than 60 times, every time I read these stories, I get so emotional, you know? And what's nice is because we have 48 distinct authors, we maintain their stories, their storytelling style and their voices. And, you know, the stories were built based on voice notes from great grandparents, you know, from pictures, from letters, you know, and when you read that, I hope, Yani, this is what I pray. I always say, you know, Palestinians are always described in numbers, you know, 33,000 have been killed. I don't know, 77,000 have been injured. But behind every single number, there's a story. And this is what this book does. You know, when you read these stories, you'll see that we spoke a lot about before the exile. What were their hobbies? What were their professions? What was their favorite food? And you'll get to understand that just like every single one of us, you know, Palestinians and any oppressed people, they're people just like us, you know. They wanted to grow their families, they had love stories, you know, some of them were mischievous, you know, some of them were, you know, and this is what you'll find here. So I always say, you know, read the first story, you know, the first story, and read the last story. The last story is from Gaza as well, you know. I think people may have not noticed that, but we intentionally made the last story be from Gaza, because a lot, I think if we were to write a book about what's happening now, it be like 2,700 yeah. volumes. Yeah, exactly.
So I want to get back to digital reading, since I am from the new generation and I am all the time, like, you know, like I read off my phone and off my laptop. So do you prefer books or digital reading?
So for me, I use Kindle. So, you know, I'm a Kindle fan, and I always say if you start using Kindle, you'll never go back to paper book. But for children, if they're starting to read, it's definitely paper, you know, paperback or like physical books, because it's different. You know, I want my son, if my son is like one, I want him to interact with the book. I want him to bite it, to throw it, because I want them to associate the book as if it's a toy, you know. And for kids, they can get distracted on like the iPads and so on. So I would say if they are emerging readers, or like as 0 to 6 years old, I always say paperback. But for adults, I think save the planet, you know, go Kindle, you know, use Kindle. I don't know, Casey's like, oh,
I because I used to use a Kindle for years, and then I don't read as much now, but I'd forget the books that I read because they didn't have the cover. Like, that cover is very memorable.
Yes.
And it even like evokes a sense of nostalgia.
100%.
You know, the colors are beautiful, and that makes me resonate with the story. So therefore, I've been the Kindle.
Kindle, anyone back to print. Yeah. Honestly, for me, again, books are beautiful. I mean, I love going to bookstores and smelling the books, and I'm that person like, oh my God, the smell of the books and so on. But I don't know, I guess as long as you read, that's what I care about, to be honest, you know?
Very finally, before you leave us, when did the book launch and how can people get their hands on it?
So basically, the book launched almost 3 weeks ago, and we decided to gift all of the copies, so they do not exist here. They are in with PCRF because 100% of the sales will go actually to support orphans and amputees. So alhamdulillah, honestly.
Amazing.
We obviously wanted to be legal, so unfortunately we cannot sell it here, but it's owned by PCRF. PCRF are selling it. You can buy it on 48stories.com.
Okay.
So you buy it and it's shipped from abroad to internationally. And the reason why we are selling it for $48 is to honor every single family that shared their story, and for you to feel like with every dollar you're actually supporting an orphan or an amputee be in Gaza.
Amazing. 48stories.com to get your hands on it. I think what you've done is amazing. I can't wait to give it a read.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. I can only imagine the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it to make it. So from all sides, thank you so much for your
time.
Thank you so
much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for coming back. Guys, that brings us to the end of our show. As always, we're back with you tomorrow morning, same time, same place. Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
And me.
Thank you.